Hi, my name is Hans Peter Meyer, and you're listening to the Lift Startups podcast series, all about the entrepreneurs, creatives, and small businesses who are growing the next economy on Vancouver Island. Morning, Liz.
Good morning, Hans. How are you?
I'm good. And hi, everybody who's listening. Today, I'm talking with Liz Wooten, owner of Human Nature Development. Liz, what is Human Nature Development?
Well, Human Nature Development is a business consultancy business, basically. We help business owners to manage themselves and or their people, if they have people, more effectively. I help them to hire the right people, to make sure that those people are happy and engaged at work and doing a good job. And I help them to turn the things that they're really passionate about into something that they can be profitable doing, which is kind of important if you're running a business.
Yeah, no kidding. There's a lot of business coaches out there and business consultants. What makes
absolutely
how is Human Nature Development unique or innovative?
Well, first of all, I think one of the important things about me is I'm a compulsive entrepreneur myself. I've run businesses before. I love being my own boss. I've worked for other people too, but this is something I always come back to. And I love turning an idea into reality. I get what that's like. And I think, you know, so rather than coming from a corporate background, which some HR consultants and so on have done, this gives me the ability to really see things from my client's perspective. But the other part of it is that I very much see things from a human perspective. So I think as entrepreneurs, there's this kind of myth that you have to be a bit superhuman to run your own business. If you want to start something, you need to work all the hours, you need to push yourself, you need to make huge sacrifices, you can't really have a life anymore, you know, all of those kinds of things. The problem with that way of thinking is that it's not really sustainable. We, as human beings, we have certain needs that we need to meet. You know, we don't want to sacrifice time with our family in the long run because we need relationships. We need other human beings. We need that family, that community. So my perspective is that actually when we look at things as human beings, first of all, and we remember that we are human beings, first of all, we actually make it possible to create long-term sustainable success in our business. So everything that I do kind of revolves around that idea. It's not about pushing yourself longer and harder and working longer and harder. It's about putting in place systems and processes that allow you to delegate, to elevate yourself away from your business, to create boundaries, and to actually run things much more effectively.
How long have you been doing this?
Well, the company was originally set up in 2010, and we incorporated in Canada in 2014 when we moved here. And that, you know, that's a kind of boring answer. I guess the real answer is that I've kind of been doing this for most of my career. It's just that, you know, once I had a company, I got paid to do it, if that makes sense. I couldn't do what I do now if I hadn't done what I've done before. And that's, you know, that's something I remind myself all the time. I've had quite an interesting and varied career, but that gives me that I have.
And what actually got you started? Like, what flipped you from working for other people to doing this as an entrepreneur?
Oh, it was a really organic kind of process, I think. I was in bridal retail for a really long time. I run a bridal retail business in Scotland. And there's a big piece of that that is not just about selling pretty things to brides. It's actually about supporting them as human beings at a time in their life when actually things are quite stressful. Mm-hmm. And I think that got me hooked on this idea that actually I'm quite good with people and I'm good at helping them to see things differently or to feel supported or, you know, just giving them what they need at a difficult time in their life, that coaching kind of. And so when I decided I was going to get out of bridal retail, and I was thinking, well, what, you know, what am I? This evolved as a concept. You know, I knew that I was going to go down the route of something that was going to help people. And I was drawn back into this this love of independent business. You know, that's kind of, you know, I didn't want to go into the life coaching sort of style of things, but this love of entrepreneurship, this deep understanding of the passion that goes into creating a business from scratch, that's really what drew me into this specific work that I do now.
So let's talk a bit about your target audience. Like who do you see are the, like, who are you wanting to work with?
I love to work with independent businesses, you know, particularly with ones that have a concept that they have created themselves, and they have seen that through to some kind of fruition. But where there is a passion behind what they do, they really believe in what they're doing, you know, their product, their service, and they want it to be as excellent as possible. So what that looks like is often that's a small business. It could be someone who's just working on their own right now, but wants to grow. It might be somebody who has grown and has reached a point where actually things are starting to fall through the cracks a bit. You know, the growth that they've had has maybe been faster than they can quite cope with, and they need to spend some time catching up and consolidating what they have. Maybe they're actually experiencing problems because of the growth, or maybe a business that wants to scale in some way, and they want to make sure that they're doing it successfully so that they don't end up with things falling through the cracks.
Right.
Typically the businesses I work with are mostly under about 60 employees. So as I say, they can be, you know, just a single person business that's fairly early on in the process, or it might be a well-established business that actually has a decent number of employees and maybe a couple of different layers of management in there as well, and a whole leadership team.
Excuse me, how big are you right now? Is it just you, or do you have a team? Or?
No, it's not just me. So I actually work with my husband, which is, you know, maybe something that some people don't know, because I tend to be, I suppose I'm more the face of Human Nature Development. I'm the one that's out there doing the networking and meeting the people and all that stuff. So my husband is also a consultant, and he's a qualified Myers-Briggs consultant. So he does MBTI stuff as well as some other things. And I've just added an associate consultant to the team as well, which is very exciting, because that means that we can meet the needs of more people. There's only one of me, there's only one of Mark. And now we have a third person to spread the net a little bit wider, which is very cool.
How big do you see this getting, like what you're doing? Do you have a vision for 5 or 10 or 25 years?
Yeah, I mean, how long's a piece of string? it's really interesting, actually, looking at this. I probably would have said a couple of years ago that this was a very difficult thing to scale because it relied on my expertise and there's only one of me. But actually, you know, over that last couple of years, I've been able to look at it in a different way, and I thought, well, actually, maybe this is something that is scalable. And adding this associate to the team is it was just an opportunity that fell in my lap. It was just the right thing to do, and that has shown me actually how possible it is to scale when you add someone who has the right values, the right experience, and the desire to do things the right way. So absolutely there is room for this to scale. In the fall, I'm looking at adding a group sort of coaching environment, which will mean that we can reach more people. We can actually help more businesses in an affordable way as well, rather than just working one-on-one. So that's very exciting. And we're not bound by geographical constraints. You know, yeah, if we add the right people.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah. Like right now, where is your clientele?
They're actually all over the place.
Right.
We have one big major client that's an ongoing thing based down in Los Angeles. We've had clients in the UK. You know, when we moved here, some of them came with us, not physically, but they stuck with us. Technology is an amazing thing. You know, there are going to be some people who prefer sitting in a room with you. Right. And those, we can only meet their needs if they're not here. We can only meet their needs if we have other associates in other places, right?
Right.
But I think actually technology means that it can be more convenient for everybody. You know, if everyone's busy, you're always trying to fit things in. If you have to go to a different location for a meeting, yeah, sometimes that's good because it puts you in a slightly different mindset. But actually, if you can sit in your office or in your living room or, you know, in your bed, in your pajamas, maybe and have a meeting with someone and fit it in to your schedule. And you can just do that using your smartphone or your laptop. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. The success of Human Nature Development, what are some of the positive spinoffs for our local and our island economy, if any? What do you have to say about that? Because I'm always interested in, like, so we have, you know, a number of entrepreneurs, small scale, some medium size, who are part of Lyft. And I'm always thinking, like, what impact are we having? And what impact are they having? What impact are you having on other parts of our economy?
Well, I actually really love this question because I think it forces you to think about, you know, what impact do you make? I think, I mean, the obviously, if I'm helping a business to run more effectively and be more profitable and employ people and for those employees to be happy and engaged and, you know, enjoy their work, that obviously has a knock-on benefit to the economy, because the more profitable our businesses are, the better the economy is doing. But I think actually it's good to look at the small scale things. You know, if you run a business with 5 employees and you have, you know, if things aren't quite jiving or if you've got high employee turnover, that kind of thing, that's having a knock-on effect on all kinds of things. Whereas if you've got happy and engaged employees, then those employees, they are, you're improving their lives, right? The quality of their life is better if they have job satisfaction. They're being paid, which means that they're able to go and spend money, you know, which benefits the economy in other ways. And if they're encouraged to spend it locally, you know, that has a knock-on effect. And it's a butterfly effect, right? It's like, you touch one thing and it can improve 5 or 6 different things. So, you know, I feel I'm having a positive on the business owner and how they feel about their business. And, you know, in some cases it can be, you know, it can turn somebody from wanting to close their business because they've had enough to actually, no, this is good. I'm doing well. So, you know, that has a knock-on effect on their employees because those people keep their jobs and they're happier and more engaged in their work, which has an effect on their families, not just financially, but on their emotional well-being as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. So, I mean, I see some of the impact that you're having just in our Biz on Deck workshops. When you contribute, you know, everybody in the room is picking something up and taking it away. And that's what I love about those workshops. And that's, I really appreciate you bringing, you know, what you do to those workshops.
They're fun.
Yeah, they are. I think so too. Before we take a break here, where can we find, what's the easiest way for people right now to find you online?
The easiest way for people to find me is probably through the website, which is humannaturedevelopment.com. I will say at this point, right now, the website is not my favorite thing about my business, but it does have contact information on it. So, you know, that's where you can find me. I'm also on Instagram, Human Nature Development, and on Facebook with the same Human Nature Development. You'll find me on both of those.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Liz. We're going to just take a short break here and we'll be back for the second part of our podcast interview. And this time we're going to be talking about, or I'll be asking you questions about you as an entrepreneur and as a person.
Awesome.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Hi, Liz.
Hi, Hans.
Thanks for coming back after the short break. So now we're going to talk about you and you as a person and you as an entrepreneur. So
cool.
Right now, what's your favorite thing about your business? Like, what's your favorite thing about your business today?
I get to do something that I'm really passionate about. And it's fun. It doesn't feel like work most of the time. And I get to make a difference to the lives of business owners and their employees and their families, which is very cool to me.
Okay. Now, your name confounds me. And I know there's a story around it. So tell me a bit about where that, I know this wasn't a question that I had given you, but tell me about this name.
The name Human Nature Development.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was actually my husband that came up with it way back. He used to work in countryside. He was a ranger for a very long time. And I think he felt nature needed to be in there somewhere. And it was just a name that he came up with. I think for me, over the course of time, the more I have identified, okay, what exactly is it that I'm really about? What is it that matters to me? And this whole idea that, you know, human beings are these amazing creatures. We have these really intelligent brains, and we're capable of all these incredible things. But we're only human. We're not perfect. We're constantly, our human nature can sometimes get in our way. It's an amazing thing, and it's also a bit of a curse sometimes. Somebody asked me a question actually last year sometime and said, yeah, your name, is human nature the problem? And I thought about it and I was like, yeah, right? it actually kind of is. We have all of these needs as human beings, you know, just these, you know, biological needs that we have to take care of. And when we understand those and we're able to work with our human nature instead of trying to fight against it all the time, then we can actually be much more successful.
Yeah.
I think that's why I've really stuck with the name,
uh-huh.
Even though people are like, oh, it's a bit of a mouthful or whatever. There is that story there.
Sure.
And so that's why.
Okay.
That's why it's there.
So what are three things that people don't know about your business? Like,
this is a hard question. Cause I was like, actually, I think I'm pretty transparent.
Uh-huh.
I work with my husband, and that, you know, that's something we talked about. But a lot of people perhaps don't realize because they don't see him so much. He's more kind of behind the scenes. And his name's Mark, by the way.
Hi, Mark.
So that's one thing. Another thing, we work with clients all over the place, not just in the Comox Valley, which again is something people might not see. And sometimes, again, something people will never see. Sometimes I do sit at home and work in my pajamas. Even though that's often something that I will coach people not to do if they're struggling to get motivated and they work from home. And, you know, sometimes you work from home, getting dressed can be something you don't bother doing. I do treat myself occasionally to working in my pajamas.
Okay, so here's a harder question here. Like, what was your biggest failure, and what did it teach you?
This is a hard thing because there's lots of failures that teach you things. I think so. Here's something a lot of people might not know about me. I actually went to acting school. That was my big dream originally, was to be an actor. And I didn't do badly after I finished acting school. I was working about 8 months out of 12, which is
pretty good.
Really yeah. good.
Congratulations.
But I quit. And some of that, not all of it, but some of that was because I was really struggling to cope with the fear of failure, the constant auditioning. Even when I had work, mm-hmm. I was still looking for work. And I really struggled with that. And it was, a lot of it was a fear of failure. So my biggest failure was actually giving into that. Mm-hmm. Funny thing is, if I'm in a position, I have run my own business, been my own boss, been an entrepreneur. I have been in a situation where even when I'm working, I'm looking for more work. That's life.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know that I can deal with that now. And I guess what it taught me, I have no regrets of, you know, the decision that I made or mm-hmm. the way my life turned out. It's very good. But I think what that did teach me was that actually fear is a very powerful thing, and that it's very difficult to overcome it, and it requires a lot of courage to deal with it and to do stuff in the face of fear, and that it can stop you from achieving, and that if that happens, that's kind of so. Mm. Yeah, I think that's probably my biggest failure.
Okay, thank you. Have mentorship or community played a role in your success?
Absolutely. I'm a big believer that if you want to do things right, that you surround yourself with the best people you possibly can. And that's the mentorship, the community that I've had it's been an organic thing. A lot of the time that when you, so here's the thing, if you want to do acting or you want to start your own business or you want to play sports to a high level or, you know, any of those things, you will naturally be surrounded, whether you want it or not, you'll be surrounded by people who tell you why you shouldn't do it or you can't do it or it's too difficult or the odds are against you or it's too risky, right? Those people just exist. They're there. Mm-hmm. When you surround yourself with people who are supportive and encourage you to be successful, it makes it more possible for you to do this difficult thing that you're going to do. And that's something that I've found is that the power of surrounding yourself with those great people who will champion you and who will cheerlead for you and who will tell you you can do it and tell you they believe in you. And you know, you might think, oh yeah, well, family and whatever will do that, but not necessarily. You know, sometimes the family are the ones that are going, oh, but it's too risky, it's too scary.
Yeah.
And you know, even if you're not, even if you don't have a formal mentor, although something to do. You don't have yourself in a community.
Liz?
Hello. Did you lose me there?
Yeah, I lost you there. what I'm going to do, actually, let's just take a quick break again and see if we can get a better connection here, okay?
No worries.
Okay, sorry about that.
No problem.
Hi, Liz. I'm not sure what happened there with that sound quality, but your conversation, you know, like when the question about community came through loud and clear, and you were just talking about the importance of mentorship, and that's where I lost you. So if you could just talk about how mentorship's helped you
in your business. Yeah, mentorship, I think running your own business can be quite a lonely place to be. A lot of people in your circle, if they're not doing it as well, they may not really understand or really get it, and understand that you know, there's a big weight of responsibility on your shoulders when you're running a business. I think mentorship is great in so many ways, but even if it's just there to remind you that you're not on your own, and that you know, there are people who support you and can share advice, and you know, what I've found with that is, you know, people who've mentored me, sometimes they'll just give me a little nugget of information that it's that one little piece of the puzzle that was missing, and having their experience and their perspective on things can just make all the difference. You know, even that tiny, tiny little piece of something, you're not on your own then, right? You have somebody you can talk to, somebody that can encourage and just reframe something a little bit for you. It's very helpful, really important.
Yeah, my experience has been it's not just in work, but in other parts of my life, that talking to people who have experience, I realize that, oh, I'm other people have walked this path.
Right.
Not only am I not alone in terms of, like, now, you know, there are other people doing this, but there are people like who can actually hold my hand or say, this is what comes next. You're right. Ready for this. I think that's so, so important in so many parts of my life. But let's get back to you. And you didn't, you know, like, you've got a fairly small team right now, but you used to work in the corporate world. So well, this question is about hires, which is something that your work is very much about. So who is your most important hire, and why was that person or that hire important?
This is a question I've given a lot of thought to, because there have been lots of hires. And actually, the conclusion I came to is that the most important hire was my first one. My first person that I hired for my own business. Uh-huh. It was terrifying, absolutely terrifying, because it's such a... I think the scariest thing is the idea that you're going to give some responsibility to another person,
right,
to do something in your business that you have created, that you want everything to be perfect in. And there's a little bit of feeling like, well, how can I trust somebody else to do this job?
Yeah.
And the whole hiring process, believe it or not, considering how often I sit and interview people now, I hated it. I found it really uncomfortable. I didn't like the putting somebody under the microscope in an interview situation, because I didn't like them to think of them feeling uncomfortable and nervous and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I picked that one as being my most important one is that I think knowing what that feels like, knowing that this sense of, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be handing over the reins for something to this person. It's like handing over your newborn baby to somebody else to have them look after it for, kind of scary, and it feels weird. So knowing what that feels like, and knowing the pitfalls of when you're actually in an interview situation and you want to do a good job of interviewing this person to see whether they're the right person to take care of your creation. But you don't want to make them feel too uncomfortable, because then you'd feel bad, right? So maybe you're not actually doing your best job at the interview. I was very lucky in that situation. My business partner at the time had a background in HR, so she took the reins on that process, which helped. But I learned so much from that. And I think now to be able to facilitate the process for other business owners that I know might be feeling that way, you know, it's really important to them that we do a good job.
Yeah.
But I'm able to make, you know, to put a candidate at their ease without without making it too easy for them, you know, like you still want to challenge the candidate. You want to make sure that you're digging in and getting what you need from them to see whether they're the right person for the job. But to be able to facilitate that process for a business owner is great. And I don't think I'd be able to do that the way I do if I hadn't been the person that hated interviewing.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting how things change like that.
Right.
Let's talk about reading. Are you a reader?
I am a reader.
Okay, so what was your favorite book as a child?
It was hard to pick one, but I loved the Nancy Drew books as a child. Sometimes I've picked up, and I don't know whether they've aged well. I don't know whether they're now, you know, really dated, or you know, whether they're really quite as I remember. But the way I remember them was that Nancy Drew was this person who just you know, she did what needed to be done. She was courageous. She conquered her fear, and she did it because it was the right thing to do. And I think that was something that I admired in her as a heroine.
Super. What is your favorite book as an adult?
Really hard to pick one. Fiction, I'm going to say The Rotters Club by Jonathan Coe.
Oh.
I don't know whether that's a book that even made it over here. The author is actually an old family friend. He dated my sister for a while.
Wow.
Which is why I started reading his books. But he is actually like an award-winning author in the UK, like really quite, quite an outstanding author. And The Rotters Club is at least part of it is set in the high school that I went to, so there's a very to that book, but it's also extremely well written. It's funny and it makes you cry, and it's excellent.
Okay, what
nonfiction? Okay. If you don't mind me putting in another
one, yeah,
is Good to Great by Jim Collins, which I know is a book that lots of people own and lots of people keep meaning to get around to reading. And I would highly recommend reading it, or maybe getting it as an audiobook if it's sitting on your shelf and you haven't read it yet. It is extremely good for, you know, anyone that it's well worth reading.
Okay, well that's a good tip. I'm a big fan of audiobooks for business type reading, because I just can't seem to actually sit down and read that stuff. So right. I do find that the audiobooks work. What are you reading right now?
Fiction. I'm reading the Outlander series. That's just, it's great escapism, right? It's it's set in Scotland, which obviously that's where I used to live. And it's very romantic and all that kind of stuff. And there is a nonfiction book that I've just finished reading, which is another one that I would highly recommend. It's called First We Make the Beast Beautiful by Sarah Wilson. And it's a book about anxiety.
Oh.
And honestly, for anybody that knows someone who suffers with anxiety or who suffers with anxiety themselves, I would really recommend reading it, because it's not a book about coping with anxiety or beating anxiety. It's almost more about it's about this woman's experience, which is very insightful and very beautifully written. And it's also almost about embracing it and learning to live with it in a constructive way. So yeah, highly recommend that.
Okay, great. A number of titles here that I've never heard of, so that's good stuff.
There you go. Yeah. New things for your reading list.
What's the smartest thing you've ever done?
I think the smartest thing I've ever done is recognizing when it was time to get out of the bridal business. It was also a very difficult thing to do. Because it wasn't really what I wanted. I loved that industry and I loved that business. But there came a point where it was just time to face the cold hard facts that things were changing dramatically in the UK in the bridal industry, and there was a combination of different threats that were appearing, and you know, looking at everything, it's like, okay, I get out now and I do it successfully, and you know, at least break even, but hopefully actually come out in the positive. Mm-hmm. Or I hope for the best and ignore all these cold hard facts and, you know, hope that things will improve. And I'm really glad I made the decision I did. The time was right. And it was a very successful exit. Which I think if I had waited longer, it wouldn't have been. But it was, you know, doing that is tough because you're saying goodbye to something you love.
Yeah.
So, you know, making a smart decision versus a heart decision.
Well, like I said, congratulations on that one. Now, what is the dumbest thing you've ever done?
The dumbest thing I've ever done is kind of linked to that. Whilst going through that exit strategy of that business, I discovered that there was something on the lease for the store that I had missed, which actually made me and my business partner personally liable to take on the lease if the business was no more.
Oh, wow.
which was a bummer.
Yeah.
And I think it would have left years worth of rent to pay if we couldn't find another tenant to take it on. And even if that tenant had gone in and if they'd then left, yeah, then it would be right back on again. You had to pay a big fee to get out of the lease. Dumbest thing I ever did was not checking and double checking every single detail on that lease agreement. Wow.
Okay, so what's the scariest thing you've ever done and how did you get through it?
So I lost you for a second there, so just repeat the question
for
me.
What is the scariest thing you've ever done and how did you get through it?
Okay. Starting my bridal business was very scary. I quit my job and I leapt in with both feet into something completely new that I'd never done before. I borrowed a lot of money to do it. And, you know, I'd done my homework, but there's still that point where you don't know if this is really going to work. And all the numbers that you put into your cash flow forecast, they're still kind of, you know, they're based on research, but they're kind of made up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's quite a scary thing to do. I think what got me through it partly was knowing that my husband was super supportive of the decision. Mm-hmm. That helped enormously. Reminding myself that I was gaining, whatever happened, I was gaining valuable experience. Mm-hmm. That I could then take to wherever I went to next. And the vision of what this thing was going to be was the other piece. I think it's very easy to give in to the fear, like we talked about before. But having a clear vision of what I was trying to create and that every little piece, every step along the way was a step towards that, actually realizing that vision, that was very important in getting me through that.
Good things. Okay, and I have to say this all the time because this question actually comes from the Tim Ferriss set of podcast questions. It's not mine, but it's a great question. What new belief, behavior, or habit adopted within the last 5 years is having the most positive impact in your life today?
This is a great question. It's a really great question. For me, I would say becoming... adopting the habit of curiosity and coming at things from the perspective of experimentation, that's probably had the biggest impact and has caused the greatest success stories in my business. I find that if there's something, we've talked about fear, if there's something that I'm a little bit fearful of doing, something that's a bit outside my comfort zone, that kind of thing. And we all know that, you know, stepping outside your comfort zone, that's where things happen. And that's where the magic is, and, you know, opportunity and all those kinds of things. But it's difficult to go outside your comfort zone sometimes. I find that when I do it from the perspective of being curious, what will happen if, you know, what if I just do this one thing? Mm-hmm. When you experiment, it makes failure okay.
Right.
Failure is then something you learn from rather than being a disaster.
Right.
And for me, that's been really important. I have found that when I allow myself to do that, and, you know, maybe something happens and I could go down the, oh no, that sounds really scary, I'm not sure I want to do that route. Or I could go down the, I'm just going to say yes and then see what happens route. If I take that, yes, I'll see what happens, magic happens more often than not. Mm-hmm. It's very rarely a disaster. It's very rarely a failure. And if it is, it doesn't really matter anyway, because it was just an experiment.
Yeah, I like to say the idea of experiments has helped me a lot, probably the last 20 years, just because then, in fact, you know, that they're always, as long as they're taken with an attitude of an experiment, they're always successful. You'll learn something. So
exactly.
So it's I mean, I feel like with Lyft, I'm constantly running experiments, and thank you for that. And then the whole curiosity thing, that's super. If you could have a conversation with someone who died before you were born, who would that be? And what would you talk about?
I gave this question a lot of thought because I felt like what I'm supposed to say is someone, you know, someone famous or really interesting or whatever. And actually the thing I kept coming back to was, I wish I could have met my grandfather.
Uh-huh.
My dad's father died before I was born. And as I get older, I'm more and more curious about my family history.
Yeah.
I would love to know. And I lost my own dad a couple of years ago. And I just wish I had that connection. I wish I could have listened to him tell stories about my dad when he was a kid, or know who he was or what he was like, and whether I share any of his traits or that kind of thing.
Right.
So yeah, that may not be quite the answer you were looking for, but that's the truthful answer for me.
No, the truthful answer, or the answer I'm looking for are, I want to know, and I want to, through this podcast series, share, you know, these kind of, they tell us something about the people I'm talking to. So everybody's had a, you know, an interesting twist on this this question.
It's a question that makes you think.
Yeah. So, how long have you been on Vancouver Island?
4 years.
Actually, what brought you to Vancouver Island? Why here? You left Scotland and you came right here?
We did. Okay, funny story. When we started to talk about moving to Canada, which is where I was born, so, you know, it wasn't completely weird that we chose Canada. We decided that wherever we fancied BC more than anywhere else, and we said, well, if we're going to move, then we would like to be able to join a Gojiru Karate Dojo,
uh-huh.
preferably one that belongs to the same worldwide organization that we belong to in Scotland. Right. So all three of us, myself, my husband, and my son, were all doing this particular style of karate at the time. And so we looked up where the dojos were in BC. There are two. And they're both on the island, one in Courtney and one in Qualicum Beach.
Oh, wow.
So we were like, okay, well, let's check out this Courtney place. And really liked the look of it. It was, you know, it had mountains and lakes and fishing and beaches. And it was a not too big, not too small community. We figured it would probably be a good size for our son as he was going through his teenage years and all that kind of thing. And so we came here for a visit, completely fell in love with the place when we left, because I didn't want to go. And yeah, that's how we ended up here.
Okay, well, that's now you've been here 4 years.
Yeah.
What is one thing that every Vancouver Islander should do this year and something most of us don't know about or perhaps don't appreciate the value of?
This is actually kind of a hard question, because I don't know that I know all of the secret places, but something that I cannot get over still after 4 years is how incredibly beautiful and amazing this place is. And I suppose my wish is that every single person that lives here takes a moment every day just to appreciate it, just to understand and really appreciate the value of living somewhere so beautiful and welcoming and full of fresh air. And, you know, just the, even on a rainy day, there's something to appreciate, right? So, yeah. I don't think you have to go somewhere that nobody else knows about to appreciate that value. I am floored daily just when I catch myself looking at the view and I'm like, oh, wow. You know, this is such an incredible place that we live. My favorite place, absolutely not a secret, but my favorite place is Kai Bay. Mm-hmm. I go there and I feel at peace. It's tranquil. It smells good. It's just a really beautiful place and a place where I feel really good. So,
okay. Well, it's interesting because I've been here most of my life and I hardly know Kai Bay at all. So maybe I need to check it out. Yeah. Okay. If someone gave you $1 million to support entrepreneurs in your community, what three things would you do?
Well, difficult question. But I would love to find a way to help people who are just starting out and haven't got two pennies to rub together kind of thing, but who have a dream, to get the help they need to get through the difficult stuff. And I don't mean like practical sort of, oh, here's how to incorporate your company or here's how to apply for a bank loan or whatever, but more the emotional support, if you like. I think starting a business, I've heard starting a business described as like having 10 years of therapy and just as expensive. And it kind of is. It is a little bit like that, that this roller coaster of emotion. It's a lot about fear. There's a lot of fear. And a lot of people give up. And, you know, we talk about how often businesses fail in their first 6 months or 2 years or 5 years or whatever. And a lot of the time, the reason they fail is not just because they're not making money. It's because the stress is too much or they're not running as effectively as they could because they're trying to do everything themselves or, you know, they become exhausted and that kind of thing. I'd love to see something that helps people, you know, whether it was like a some kind of program that they could access that's subsidized or something like that, that would help those people to get the help they need. You know, when people invest in coaching or getting some help, the difference it can make in their business. And it would be great if people could have access to something early, accelerate their early growth, right? I would also love to develop a program that helps people to kind of blast through the confusion of huge amounts of information there is on the internet. Things. I love simple. That's one of my favorite things is when things are simple, then it makes them easy to do and beautiful. And there is this, you can go on the internet and access huge amounts of information for free, which is great. But how do you sift through and how do you choose what to do? You know, and if you don't select carefully, you can end up doing three different things that are all competing with each other and nothing really works. So it would be great to create something that was like a one-stop information point to point people in the right direction of like, you know, forget all of that out there and just do this instead. And then I guess maybe my third thing would be, and maybe this exists, I don't know, but I'd love to create something that helps people with marketing, but not in a, okay, you know, here's where to post stuff and the hashtags to use, and, you know, I know all about the Facebook algorithm. That's the stuff that people get hung up on. And that's why people are always going, oh, I need help with marketing. I don't know what I'm doing. But until you've got a clear message about what you do and what, you know, what makes you different, that's going to help you connect with people, I feel like you're kind of, you can invest a lot of money in help in having somebody help you with marketing, but it's not necessarily going to help if the message isn't there. Mm-hmm. So it would be great to develop a program that helps people just identify the key pieces of the marketing message that they want to put across.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know if you've listened to Terry O'Reilly's or read his book, This I Know. I mean, he spent his life in marketing, but he had this really great section of the book that's just about that. Like it, and then basically that's the foundation of all your stuff. That's a very interesting. So I'm obviously like picking people's brains for what, you know, what we could be doing with Lyft here. I mean, some of this thing is impossible for us to do at this point, perhaps, but other things maybe could happen. I don't know. Vision question. So you've chosen to live in the Comox Valley on Vancouver Island. If all went according to your plans and wishes, what will this community look like in 5, 10, or 25 years?
Yeah, I found this question quite hard to answer, because I would say, I mean, there are certain things that I am involved in community wise, and there are other things that I'm just happy to kind of, you know, go with what happens. But here are a couple of things that I would really love. I live in the city of Courtney, and I would love to be able to do things like keep my own hens or bees, maybe, you know, like I'd love to see more encouragement of people who are in the urban areas to grow their own stuff and to you know, maybe raise their own stuff a little bit more. Mm-hmm. That, I think that would be really cool. I'm quite environmentally conscious, and I love living here because of that. You know, I think there's a lot of people who are environmentally conscious here. So I, you know, I'd love to see a little bit more emphasis on how we as a community can support everybody in the community to learn more about, you know, how to be a bit more self-sufficient and not rely so much on things that have been flown here or, you know, come here from very far away. So yeah, I think that's something that I would really like to see. And part of that as well is supporting local business. It's something that's really impressed me about this community is how locally focused it is. But, you know, for there to be more recognition of the importance of supporting that local business, because it's not just, you know, it's not just that you're supporting a local business and that's maybe a more environmentally conscious thing to do or whatever, but you're supporting that person's family. You're mm-hmm. helping them as a human being to put food on their family's table. And, you know, my experience has been that small companies more often than not do want to look after their employees, you know, that, and that we've talked about how much that has a knock-on effect for the whole community. And, you know, if you're supporting a local business that is treating its employees ethically and paying them fairly and all that kind of stuff, you're supporting a whole culture. So I'd love to see more of that.
Okay. What advice do you have for young entrepreneurs on the island?
Number one, be curious. I think curiosity is something that children have and that we lose a little bit as we get older. So yeah, be curious all the time. Number two, it's okay not to know everything or even not to know anything. That's okay, because you can figure it out, you can ask for help, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Never pretend like you know more than you really know. It's better to be honest with yourself. and be kind, be generous, invest in the people you hire, because actually they're your greatest competitive advantage. It's not your product or your service or the way you do things. It's your people ultimately that are your greatest competitive advantage.
Okay, good stuff. Now, what is something or some things quirky that most people don't know about you, but you're now going to share with the world?
I probably have a ton of quirky stuff. I have a black belt in karate. I'm not training at the moment because I have a back injury, but I do have a black belt in karate, which sometimes surprises people. When I was 17, I taught rifle shooting to the cadets locally where I was at high school. That was quite interesting because 14-year-old boys at the time weren't necessarily very good at listening to 17-year-old girls, but it's an interesting experience, especially when it came to firing weapons. I love to knit. I'm quite an avid knitter and it's quite addictive. And just over a year ago, I discovered painting. So now one of the things that I do to let off steam, relax, whatever, is paint. So mostly they're either Vancouver Island or Scotland. Uh-huh. But I had no idea I could paint until I just picked up a brush and had a go. So
cool. Now, this is the last question, and I ask this of everybody, and they get really interesting. Sometimes the answers take me around the world. Sometimes they take me to my neighborhood. What's your favorite place to eat in the whole world, Liz Wooten?
Well, very, very tricky, because I do love to eat. I once went to a Michelin star restaurant in Paris called Le Petit Moulin, which is a very beautiful little place. The food was, it wasn't food. It was an evening's entertainment. It was absolutely incredible. We ordered carte blanche, which basically meant you could say if there was anything you really didn't like or couldn't eat. And then everything that came out was a surprise. It was just what the chef felt like giving you that evening. So it was something like 9 courses and they were all incredible, absolutely incredible. So yeah, that was amazing. But the most consistent place, and a bit more down to earth, it's probably a tiny little restaurant in Fife in Scotland called Ostler's Close, which it's a husband and wife team that run it. It's been open for, gosh, a very long time. And every time I went, the food was amazing. And it wasn't fancy. It wasn't like, you know, the presentation was good, but it wasn't like the sort of, you know, making it look like a piece of art on the plate. It was a little bit more down to earth, but everything was cooked perfectly. And all of the flavors was always so well balanced. So that's a restaurant I miss because it's a bit far to go for a birthday.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Good reasons to travel. Let's give a shout out to how people can get in touch with you, Liz Wooten, at Human Nature Development. So where can they find you?
They can find me at humannaturedevelopment.com, on Instagram at Human Nature Development, and on Facebook at Human Nature Development.
Now, well, you've also got a Twitter handle. Do you not publicize that, or is that?
Twitter is the one piece of social media that I struggle to keep up with. Mm-hmm. So yes, I do have a Twitter handle, and it is Human Natured D.
Right.
Can find me on there, but it's not a place that I frequent as often as the other two that I've mentioned.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for your time this morning, Liz. This has been very enlightening and a lot
Thank
of fun.
You.
And we'll be talking soon. And for anybody who is on the island, Liz is a regular at our Biz on Deck workshops. Even if you're not on deck, if you're just sitting listening in the room, there's lots to learn when Liz has things to, and she always has things to offer the people on deck. So I hope you can join us. And if you are not on the island, then have a look at Liz's website. And if you're needing that kind of help, then please be in touch with her.
Thank you, Hans.
Okay. Talk soon, Liz. Bye-bye.
Talk soon. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Lift Podcasts, a series all about the entrepreneurs, creatives, and resource people who are growing local businesses. If you liked what you heard, please share via email or social media. And if you are sharing via social media, please use Vancouver Island's talent brand or talent tag, hashtag WEAREVANISL. That's hashtag We Are Van Isle. This is one of the tools we've created to promote entrepreneurs on the island. Lift is able to do its work thanks to the support of solution sponsors like SureCopy Courtney, Mastermind Strategy, 50th Parallel Public Relations, Finneron Hyundai, Jabin Postal Films, Presley & Partners, and 98.9 The Goat, as well as community partners like Atlas Cafe, The Island Word, My Tech Guys, McKinnon Photography, Island Soul Films, Investors Group, The Creator Space, and Douglas Magazine. Together, we're making shift happen for local businesses. Thanks for listening.